Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to talk to a filmmaker from Paris, France. Yes, I'm very proud of the fact that Jean-Marie Marbach was the first filmmaker to ever fly across an ocean to attend one of the film festivals that I program. Jean-Marie's music video, Fiebre en la Disco. I know I'm a nerd about trying to pronounce foreign words correctly, but you just got to give me that. But anyway, Fiebre en la Disco, it won the Grand Jury Prize for Music Video at Film Invasion LA in 2017. And as glad as I was that he was able to attend in person, I was even happier to be able to tell him in front of an audience that he'd won an award. If you go to discoverfilm.net and you go to the posting for this podcast, there's a link to Jean-Marie's website where you can watch the video for Fiebre en la Disco, as well as a lot of his other work. All right, obviously we couldn't talk in person, so this is the recording of a Skype conversation, and I don't think you need any further setup. Here's Jean-Marie.
I guess I always wanted to tell stories in a way or another and find a way to share, not only stories, but find a way to share images I had in my mind. I had these visuals popping up in my head, usually while listening to music I enjoyed, and I always looked for a way of sharing them. So since I couldn't draw and since I didn't have the gear and production values to shoot anything decent, because this was before the appearance of affordable DSLR cameras, the only way left to me at the time was through motion graphics. So I learned my way through After Effects, and after a couple of months, when I realized I could actually be paid for this, I edited a showreel and sent it to production companies and agencies. And for a year or so, I was rejected everywhere, sometimes nicely, sometimes not, until one day I got a meeting, not at a production company, but with a record label, because I thought it could be worth a try to go to the labels directly. And it went well, but the guy told me he didn't have anything for me, so I took it as another rejection. But I must have made some kind of impression, because a few weeks later, I got a call from a producer who was looking for motion graphics artists. And he got my number from that same record label, so they not only kept my number, but also gave it to him. So he had this small TV ad to deliver for the release of a new CD and asked me if I was interested, and of course I said yes. And this was my first gig in the field, and it was a kind of cheap ad where you could see the CD slip inside the case by itself, and ending with a close-up on the cover. And I remember, and it went well, and this is how I started in the field.
So it wasn't at university or anything like that that you studied this. You just did it all on your own?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was a student in literature and then history, and then I had, in a previous life, I had a regular job at the cable company in Paris, and I realized I thought that I could keep my interest in movies and storytelling as a hobby, and then I realized that when you have a daytime, full-time job, it pretty much takes all your life. So I quit everything, and I gave it a try.
Wow, that's a great story. That's great to hear that you pulled off the transition.
It was risky, difficult, because I had a comfortable job back then, but where at the place where I was working, there were guys like 40 or 50, and they all told me about their stories, how they were trying to be singers or actors or filmmakers when they were 20 something, and they were 40 and 50 and they were still there. And it was kind of a mirror of what I could become, and it was a boost for me to give it a try.
Right. It was like a warning. You're like, I don't want to turn out like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so you were really looking for really an outlet for creative expression.
I guess so. In retrospect, I guess so, because I never thought of working in VFX, but motion graphics led me to VFX, but it was the only way that I could express myself and be able to picture what I had in mind. When you have something in mind and when you share it, and when you find a way to do it, it's like I assume it's like when you learn to talk, it's a way of communication. And
right, you learn the language.
Yeah.
And then you're able to to write things, to create things.
Yeah, to visually share things I had in mind, and this led to, you know, working in, with other people, and this was the beginning of everything. And then a few years later, I was working on compositing and color timing for a TV series, and the company producing it was also producing a feature film at the same time. And there were several VFX shots required by the script, but they felt like they didn't have the budget to produce them. And since the shots were not essential to the story, they were actually thinking of removing them from the script. And the director of the TV series I was working on heard of it and told them that maybe I could do it for a cheaper price in the VFX studio. So they asked me if I fell up to it, and I said yes. And the next thing I know, I was in south of France on set with several French famous actresses and with a director who didn't have a clue about VFX, and he immediately relied on me for these shots, and that's how I became VFX supervisor. And so this was how I made really the transition between motion graphics and VFX. And this was brought me closer to the filmmaking.
So filmmaking, you had an eye on filmmaking from the beginning?
Kind of, yes.
I mean, deep down you had visions, and you were seeking a way to get yourself to the point that you could just start accomplishing that.
I never told myself I'm going to be a filmmaker. I told myself I need to find a way to compensate my need for storytelling, telling, knowing that I'm not likely to become a filmmaker ever, because I didn't have any connections, I didn't know anything.
Right. So you had humility. I would call that humility with ambition.
That's a nice way to put it, but when you need ambition to get somewhere. So too much humility, maybe a break, it may stop you from going as far as you could. So I don't know if it's humility, but
and one of the key words to me that you used was, you mentioned storytelling. So clearly you are a storyteller at heart.
Yes, because I was not interested in painting or, you know, in drawing. There had to be some kind of story and some narrative included in what I wanted to create. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, which shows in the film of yours that you submitted to Film Invasion LA, which was clearly a story, even within, you know, a lot of people don't tell stories in music videos, or if they do, they're really simple. Whereas yours, you know, was kind of a high concept story.
Thank you. It was a deliberate move on my part to try to make it look as a movie as possible, because I wanted to show and wanted to try to direct it as a movie and show that I could be able of doing it. So this is why it's not only the song, you have an intro and an outro conclusion, and you have this scene where the girls are fighting and firing at each other, which is really, really, really directed and created as a movie scene and not as a music video. So this was a really decision on my part to use this opportunity of working on this video to you know, to train a bit on the movie kind of storytelling.
Yeah, I really enjoy hearing that too, because I think I told you at the Q&A after your film that this is the kind of short film I see that I go, I certainly hope that this filmmaker gets to make a feature someday. And here you are saying that you were basically making this as a calling card to say, look, I've got a vision. I could do a feature. It'd be better than a lot of things that people go to in the theaters. But before we get to that, I don't want to jump too far ahead. You're obviously very accomplished in VFX. So that probably took a while, because I think once you even maybe an email signature or something, I came across your website and saw commercials and other things you'd made.
Yeah, well, after after a few years in VFX as a VFX artist and supervisor, I started getting directing offers, but they were for very, very safe commercials. And although I was super happy to get them, it was also frustrating at times on a creative level, because you get to work with a team of, they call themselves the creatives, and they are 10, 15 people, and everyone has to, you know, to give their advice. At the end, it's very difficult to get, if you have an idea, if it's very difficult to get it through. So I decided to produce and direct two music videos, and the second one won some awards, and it got noticed in commercial agencies. And so I started to get offered productions for higher profile clients like Evian and McDonald's. And this is how I entered the higher profile agency field, and my music videos were also noticed by record labels, who approached me with their own bands. So this is how I got to direct more music videos, and it's been going on like this since. I work either as a director or a VFX artist or VFX supervisor for other directors, and I'm lucky enough to work only with directors I get along with, and because it's nice for me, because there's less pressure when I'm not directing, and this is enjoyable for me to work for other directors from time to time. And and this brought me a little more closer to directing things that I felt like directing, because the good thing is that even if my music videos now are commissioned by record labels, they all, until now, have left me quite some freedom on the creative level. So it's been going well.
Right. So when you're getting hired to direct a music video, you're not being handed storyboards and saying, we want you to shoot this. They're bringing you in as the creative force behind it. What you're saying resonates for me, because I know of, for a while, and I imagine it's still continuing, I was very aware that a lot of the best filmmakers started in music video. You know, from Fincher. And
I was about to mention Fincher. Yes.
Yeah, and actually, oddly, I went to high school with a gentleman named Francis Lawrence, who I think he did Constantine and some other big films. Mm-hmm. And they all started in music video, even, you know, doing a Britney Spears video. And then the person ends up making great films. And I'm like, wow, music video might be the best incubation space of really talented film directing.
Yeah, Mark Pellington, too, is a director I like, who did a lot of music videos before filmmaking. But music videos, for me, is really the last space of total creative freedom.
No, I believe you. It makes sense, because you're dealing with creative people, so they're going to want to unleash your talents.
Maybe not only that, but the goal of every band and every record label is to get noticed, and you still have music videos where you just have a band playing their instruments and that's it. But having been in music video festivals, I was a little floored by how creative it was, and the number of music videos every year that are super creative and super original, and the guys working on it are really talented, is made me dizzy. It's a real, like you said, an incubator, but a powerful one.
I know. Would you believe people have actually submitted music videos to the film festivals that are just a band standing on stage playing, and they just edit this performance in a studio that's dubbed, and I'm like, really, you think that's a music video you should be submitting to a film festival? But I am obviously obviously biased against them. But
well, you have a music video category, so maybe they thought, yeah,
we do, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying that I would be bored doing it, and I'm bored as not someone in the audience watching it. I'm always bored my music video is when after the first 30 seconds you've actually seen everything. So I like to reveal something and then something else and then something else. People tell me it's not always a good thing because now the audience have a shorter attention span, and this is why I assume you noticed. But since for the last year, when you have movie trailers, now you have a trailer for the trailer.
They do a 30-second trailer as well as the standard, two and a half minute.
Ten seconds editing of the best shots, not of the movie, but of the trailer, to make sure that the audience will not flip to another channel. And then you have the trailer, so the attention span is getting extremely low now, and this is why I guess Vine at one point was so successful. 6 minutes, 6 seconds video. Yeah, we can't go further than that. So my way of doing an intro and not revealing everything right away may be a weak point, because some people will watch for 10 or 20 seconds and they say, okay, and they flip. But this is what I wanted to do, and this is what I like as an audience, is to keep having my interest rebooted after 1 minute or so.
Yeah, well, so. And like you said, I mean, I don't think anyone would be bored by the first 6 seconds of your work, because you are hooking them right then and there with both with visuals and story. I mean, it's not like it's just people standing still for 6 seconds and someone going, well, nothing's going to happen here.
Yeah, but nothing is happening still. And I can tell you from the stats that some people are not, some people are not waiting to see what happens.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, but this is a choice. The fact that I have these intros in my videos before the music starts is a good thing when I want to go to film festivals, but it's not a good thing when I need to hook the audience online. I can tell you that.
Interesting. Because, well, is there a different version, like that the record company requests that gets rid of the beginning and end and just is only the song?
Yes, definitely. Because first, when my videos are also aired on TV, and on TV they go straight to the music, and they remove the credits and everything. And the label has they have a deal with Vivo, and on Vivo it's all also straight to the music. So I have nothing to. I don't have any work. It's not my call, but I'm okay with this, as long as they keep the complete version online. And also because a lot of people use YouTube not to watch videos but to listen to music. I've noticed that a lot. And it's a really important part of YouTube users. They just do playlists. When you have, in my case, when you have the production logo and then an intro without the music, it doesn't work. They go somewhere else because they make the playlist for parties and stuff. And so
I do understand that. Actually, the 10-year-old girl who I live with, she doesn't even occur to her to listen to music in any fashion other than YouTube. So with a video project, I mean, you are expressing how much creative freedom you have. And I think with Fiebre en el Disco, you actually did you reach out to that band because they're your favorite band?
I became a fan of this band because the label sent me videos from them and their CDs and their vinyls. And after directing two videos for one of their artists, they invited me to Madrid to thank me for a party, for a concert of this artist. And while I was there in Madrid, the head of the label told me, hey, by the way, Modular, the band you love so much, they're currently working on a new album. It's a disco album, and they have a cosmic disco track. And I assume he knew that I knew how I would react, but I told him, Modular, I already love them, cosmic disco, I never dreamed of having an opportunity to direct a Cosmic Disco video. I told him, I don't know what you have planned for them, but I want to direct this video, and this is how it happened. So technically, he didn't offer me the video. I asked for it, but I'm sure he did it because he knew how I would react, and I'm sure that if I didn't say anything, he would have commissioned it officially.
Right. So once you knew you were once it was done, what was your process? Did you just start brainstorming, or was there go back and forth with the band?
Well, the first process was with the head of the label, and we were talking at his place, and the first thing to get solved was how to direct a video with a band. I wanted to shoot in Paris with my crew and with the dancers, but the band could not come in France. So, but everything came naturally, but the first thing we had to solve was how to insert them in the video.
And you solved that wonderfully. I love the way you solved it. Was that your first idea for solving that problem, or did you throw a few ideas at him, or did you say, "I have a great idea. Let's put boxes on heads"?
Everything was done with the decided with the Louis Calvo, the head of the record label. I don't know why he kept talking about having the band members on columns, but round columns. And I had a technical problem with that because when you have to map a texture or someone on a round texture, it's difficult for technical reasons. And I said, okay, I'm okay for the columns, but they can't be round. They have to be flat, you know, like a four-sided columns. And he said, okay, I don't mind. And this is how the singer being inside of a square column came through. It was me trying to adapt the original idea of the round column from the label, and then I extrapolated this to the guy who's not in a column but who has his head inside a cube, a square helmet. And I thought that the square was also interesting because it would match the square of the disco floors. I remember during the Q&A you said you thought it was a great idea and the initial inspiration, but basically it was more pain in the ass because it was just a way to work through unbelievable and unusual problems for music videos, because when you're doing a music videos, you know, all the you always have the band in front of the camera, you always have the band with you. In this case it was not the case, so it was just, you know, finding our way through problem solving because of this peculiar case.
Right. So what I thought was a great artistic choice, you're telling me it was just a pain in the ass. Well, it's funny because it reminded me of things when I was a kid. I saw Moominchance, and I recall, you know, they had a mime performance, and I recall they had box heads with like pieces of paper, and they'd peel them off one by one to change expressions. So yeah. It reminded me of all these artistic things I've seen over my life. Oh. And so I'm happy to accept your version.
but I still see it
as it's just, you know what, it's just I'm forgetting the word, but it's, you know, it's just was meant to be. It just works out perfectly. Maybe unconsciously I am associating with the squares, the light squares on the disco floor too. But it just works so well. It makes it more interesting than if you had them there.
Of course, definitely. I totally agree with you on this. And if I say it's a pain in the ass, it's because instead of just having the singer singing in front of the camera, I had someone else, and then I had the singer singing in Argentina, and then I had to track the head of the singer of the model in Paris to recreate to extract her head movements, and then I had to create a 3D model of the cube, and then I had to map the singer from Argentina on the 3D model. It was an unbelievable amount of work for just having the singer singing in a shot. So this is why I said it was a pain in the ass, but obviously It ended up being different. Some people find it weird. You find it great. But in any case, it was not more noticeable than just having a singer singing in front of the camera like usual. I had one of the reviews I had was on a British website called Promo News, and they do only music videos. And the the guy wrote, it's a weird one, and it keeps getting weirder. So I don't know if he meant it as a good thing, but I was glad, I was happy, I was proud of this preview, because I was okay with being weird and getting weirder. So this cube thing felt like weird to a lot of people, but they remember it, and I don't ask for anything else. You know, I understand how it might sound weird for some people, but I thought, let's go all the way. Especially with this band, because this band is really into 60s and 70s sci-fi, and I didn't have to explain my ideas to them. They immediately got it, and we had the same references, and it was a pleasure to work with them. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to go all this way in such a crazy script with other bands and in another circumstance. So I just thought, let's go.
Yeah, so your process, you write a script first?
No, I...
Or storyboards, or...
No, I listen to the music and it all comes up by itself.
Right, so you just visualize almost the completed... completed film as you listen to the music?
Yeah, the storyboard is in my head, which is kind of exhausting after a while, because I don't do really storyboards. I do a shot list for the shooting, but all the shots are in my head, and every time I complete a shot in post-production, it's a shot less I have to think of. And it's really liberating, and I get to rest more when the closer I arrive to the end of the post-production, because the more shots that are completed, the less I have to think of. And so at the beginning, it's very heavy, and I think of it all the time. I think of it when I go to bed, and I have all these shots in my head. And I don't know, maybe I could do a storyboard, but I never, maybe it was a, it always worked this way. It was all in my head, and all the ideas, all the editing was done in my head, more or less. Of course, I have a great editor who helped me a lot in post-production, but the main story and the main, some changes, transitions from one scene to the other, were all in my head while listening to the music. I don't know why, it's the easiest way for me. I just listen to the music, and ideas they come by themselves, which is why I could not do a video for a song that I don't like. I know directors who can direct videos and be at the top of their game, even if they don't care about the music. Tim Cruise, who I met at the festival last year with you, he told me that he didn't like all the songs he directed the music videos for, but he didn't care. And I thought, I was really impressed, because I wouldn't be able to do this. If I have to listen to a song hundreds of times, I have to like the music. And this is a weak point for me, because it narrows the number of artists that I can work for.
Well, I imagine it does. But also, if you're listening to it and you're storing the entire film in your head, which could be 4 to 8 minutes of video, of screen time, my goodness, you do have to love it, don't you?
Yeah.
You are the receptacle. You are the storage unit. I imagine if all goes well and you do move on to make some features, the challenge of holding an entire feature in your head might be a bit much.
Not necessarily, because I have to tell you, I'm currently working on a feature script with a screenwriter, and it's very, very precisely written. And this is not, when I work on a music video, I do not write as scene by scene immediately. So the fact that it's written, you have the dialogues, you have the, you know, synopsis, you know where it's going, you know where it's going on paper or, you know, digital, whatever. And it's a relief because it's in text. I do not have to...
Right. You don't have to store it in your mind as you... Every time you go down the script, you revisualize, but you're just improving upon or visualizing what you've already visualized. Yeah. So the script can store your...
Yeah, the screenwriter is here to write it. And I never... Obviously, I never had a screenwriter for a music video. So it's different. Luckily.
Yeah, so is this an idea, is this your concept, and then you found a screenwriter to collaborate with?
I've been looking for a film concept that could be directed and produced for very, very little budget, and that could feature my VFX abilities without just being VFX thrown at your face for, you know, the story had to justify the VFX. So, and more specifically, particle effects. And so I've been working with two different screenwriters. There's an American screenwriter and a French one, and the French one came up with an idea that I really liked. And the story implies particle effects. And so, and of course, there are corrections, or I get to comment on them and say, I'd rather have this going on than that. But the original concept was his. He completely took into account all the things I told him, you know, low budget, particles in the story in a meaningful way. And so far, I'm pretty happy where he's heading to.
Well, that sounds excellent. I am very happy to hear you say that you want the effects to serve the story, and not the story to serve the effects. I think my main complaint with a lot of feature films since Star Wars is they're like, okay, we can do these effects. Let's just make it write a story that serves, you know, a battle scene like this and a scene like that. And you end up with a lousy film because it wasn't about the story. It was just about the effects.
Completely with you on this. But in my case, I didn't have any choice because, let's face it, I mean, my only chance to get a little bit noticed as an indie independent filmmaker is to have VFX on a level that you don't usually see on independent films. And so...
Yeah, no, I imagine you, if you make an independent film with the kind of effects you're capable of, that is going to blow everyone away. They're gonna not believe what they're seeing.
As an independent, almost, you know, do-it-yourself film, yes, I believe it might, you know, get noticed because you don't usually see these kind of effects on such, you know, low-budget films. This is what I'm aiming at.
I can't wait to see something like that, actually.
Well, I may send you the script and ask for your advice, you know, just to see what you think of.
I'm always willing to do that. I am open to the filmmakers I meet through the festival.
We need to talk about the festival because I met so many great people and people I'm working with right now. So, you know, your selection has incredible consequences, professional and personal, at least for me. And it was going to LA was a good move on my part.
I was so honored. Yeah, well, first of all, thank you. It's so great to hear that you and other filmmakers actually forged quality relationships at the festival, and I'm really, really happy that connections were made.
Well, selection on that day was particularly good, and it's already rare when you get to watch a movie that really gets to you and you really like. But when you, the filmmakers are in the room with you, and when you get to chat with them, and then you, you know, have dinner with them, and then you work together 2 months later, it was just amazing for me.
So I am very glad to hear that you're working on a feature. Are you working on just one feature script with that in mind, and you're continuing your career in music video and VFX?
I'm still working on commercials and just to make a living, because I don't make a living out of music videos and VFX as well. I mean, commercials and VFX to make a living, but not music videos. The feature film was just, you know, coming from a desire to go to the next step, and people tell me that, you know, you should do a short before, but I thought, you know, I don't see much of a difference between doing a short and a feature film. There is obviously a difference in length, but you get, in both cases, you need to find a producer, you need to find a crew, and, you know, the difference for me between working for 1 week or 3 or 4 weeks for shooting, it's not that much. So I don't really believe in the exposure you can get with shorts. I mean, I know you. I'm not the good person to tell that.
No, I think you're right. But also, there's an argument that your music videos are shorts. So
exactly,
you've done that. So why do more of it?
My last music videos were formatted and tailored as shorts. So I thought if I have to go to a narrative fiction, I might as well. I have the crew, I have the connections, I have the technical via post-production abilities to make it work. So might as well do a feature film. This was my reasoning behind it. So music videos are already planned. I have my VFX job, you know, going on regularly. So this leaves me to the next step, which is a feature film. And I'm working with this screenwriter on a regular basis, and it's all coming together.
That sounds fantastic. I'm so glad to hear that it's wonderful that someone of your skill and talent is so busy, and then it's also even more wonderful to hear that you're able to use that to leverage your purely creative side and make a feature film, because we could use more great feature films. So I can't wait to see what you make.
I can't wait to be able to show you.
I know it's a recurring theme on this podcast, but every time I get to know one of the filmmakers from one of the film festivals better, they just turn out to be a really nice person. Okay, as I said at the top of the podcast, if you go to discoverfilm.net, there's going to be a link to Jean-Marie's website where you can watch Fiebre en la Disco as well as a lot of his other great work. At discoverfilm.net, of course, you can see a lot of great shorts and get links to great feature films, all the best stuff that I've seen on the film festival circuit. At discoverfilm.net, there's info about the film festivals that I program. That's Film Invasion LA, where I met Jean-Marie, and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. And I think that takes care of it. Thanks for listening.